President Trump has been an outspoken critic of wind energy, both on land and at sea.
I never understood wind, and I know windmills very much. I've studied it better than anybody. I know it's very expensive.
Trump says windmills, as he calls them, are also noisy, ugly, and he claims they cause cancer. But with the upcoming election, there are signs the administration's position on wind energy could be shifting. It comes at a critical time for the development of offshore wind, especially here in New England. Last year, at the last minute, the administration surprised the industry, stalling construction of the nation's first megascale wind project off the coast of Martha's Vineyard. WBUR's Bruce Gilliman reports now on the politics, past and present, and on the future prospects of offshore wind.
The Department of Energy estimates offshore wind in U.S. waters could generate twice as much electricity as the country currently uses. Much of the strongest and steadiest wind blows along Massachusetts coast, where developers have long had big plans for offshore wind and infrastructure on land. New Bedford's Marine Commerce Terminal is the nation's first and still only offshore wind staging facility. It's enormous, 4 football fields long.
29-acre facility. This was purpose-built for offshore wind.
Bruce Carlisle is managing director for offshore wind with the Massachusetts Clean Energy Center. It owns and operates the port facility. It was built for the ill-fated Cape Wind offshore project, which never made it into the water despite a 16-year, $100 million effort. But Carlisle says the terminal is ready for the future.
This is specially designed to be able to handle some of the heaviest loads in the world, and certainly some of the largest cranes in the world.
The pier can support loads of 20,000 pounds per square foot. Offshore wind is big. The bigger the tower, the longer the blade, the more power that can be generated. Today, the largest turbines in the world are manufactured by General Electric in France. They're nearly 3 times the height of the Statue of Liberty. Each blade is 351 feet long. They're planned to be used in the nation's first large-scale offshore wind project, Massachusetts Vineyard Wind.
We're going to be importing these components from Europe. And then we're going to start to move into another phase. It's going to be the jobs and the benefits that are going to be associated from producing these locally.
That's the plan. Build a new industry spawning thousands of jobs and investing billions in businesses on land. But there's a catch that could disrupt those big plans. In fact, a couple of catches.
Sea scallops, cod, haddock, flounder, redfish.
Scott Rorum is a third-generation New Bedford fisherman. This is the most profitable fishing port in the country. Roro is adamantly opposed to putting wind turbines offshore.
We've been fishing these waters since the 1800s. What gives them the right to come in?
Tom Riley agrees. He's been fishing out of New Bedford for 47 years.
Yeah, it's going to hurt our fishing. The wind farms are going to be right in the traditional fishing areas. I'm against it.
But until August 2019, it seemed like smooth sailing for the $2.8 billion Vineyard wind farm. The 84-turbine development had all of the required state and local environmental permits. Construction was to start in just a few weeks, but the Trump administration unexpectedly decided to slow things down.
I asked that we do a reset, think more carefully about the things that were going on.
Secretary of the Interior David Bernhardt, a former gas and oil lobbyist, visited Boston this summer to explain the administration's decision to delay federal permitting of Vineyard Wind.
Ultimately, I need to have a development program that is done in a way that's sustainable for everybody, right?
Bernhardt says there were so many offshore wind projects being planned up and down the Atlantic coast that federal regulators needed more time to study the total environmental impacts of all of them. The draft of the review came out this summer, and Secretary Bernhardt now says he's eager to see offshore wind develop. In fact, the administration recently streamlined the federal environmental review process, reducing public input, which could speed up the approval of the projects. But the administration's nearly year-long study delayed the first wave of offshore projects, putting billions of dollars in contracts up in the air. Vineyard Wind considered calling it quits, but CEO Lars Peterson says he's pleased with the draft study's findings, which could be finalized in late November.
We are quite confident that we have done a good job of trying to mitigate the effects that we will have.
Vineyard Wind has pledged tens of millions of dollars in compensation to fishing interests in Rhode Island. But the developer and Massachusetts fishermen are still far apart.
And it's very frustrating, actually, that we're this far along and at this point, and there's just still so much misunderstanding.
Annie Hawkins is executive director of the Responsible Offshore Development Alliance.
Very different cultures between fishing and offshore wind. And so a lot of our job ends up being just basic translation, you know, between these two.
Hawkins represents commercial fishing interests, and that includes the health of the seas. She wants to make sure the configuration of offshore wind farms will enable researchers to monitor fishing stocks, which are changing as the Atlantic Ocean warms and species move north.
I'm not sure that anyone has a really clear indication of where all this is heading. You know, there's a lot of wild cards here.
Bird experts agree with the commercial fishing industry. Joan Walsh, chair of ornithology at Mass Audubon, says there is no question thousands of offshore wind turbines will impact the ocean environment.
It's important for us to find out exactly what these turbines do when we put them in the water and to learn from that as we continue to develop the industry.
Walsh says the certainty of climate change leaves no alternative to offshore wind power, which could become a $100 billion industry in the United States within a decade. She says we all have an environmental and financial stake in the future.
There are investors that are involved in this, and they may be your pension plans and they may be my pension plans. And it's important for us to all understand what's at stake here and how we do the best that we can to be able to have this industry advance responsibly.
As we approach the upcoming election, the interests of greenbacks and green energy are converging as a powerful political force, says fishing industry advocate Annie Hawkins.
It does not appear to be as partisan as you would necessarily think.
But there are wide differences between President Trump's past negative statements about wind energy and Joe Biden's aspirations for the U.S. to use only carbon-free electricity by 2035. Dan Shreve is head of global wind research at the energy consulting firm Wood Mackenzie.
Well, definitely the outcome of the November election is going to have some impact on the offshore space.
Shreve predicts that under a second Donald Trump administration, there would be a slow build-out of currently planned offshore wind projects. But he believes that Biden would take aggressive action and move to open up more ocean space for development. It's blue sky thinking. But technically, it's possible that by the year 2030, the U.S. could be generating the same amount of offshore wind that European nations are generating today. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Bruce Gellerman.